attention, ladies. Your period is trying to tell you something. According to today's guest, your period is not just your period. It is a key to the story about your health. If your periods are painful, irregular, or heavy, naturopathic doctor and author, Dr. Lara Bryden, says that if you fix your health, you will fix your period. We are talking about how to have a healthy period, healthy hormones, and we are going to shed some light on PMS and find out exactly what the birth control is doing to your body. That's next on Through the Eyes of Women.
Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program for, about, and by women. News and interviews concerning the lives and times of women, local, national, and international.
Today on Through the Eyes of Women, no matter your age or situation, it's time to get to know your period. I'm your host, Lynette Nutter. Our guest today is Dr. Lara Bryden. She has almost 20 years' experience in women's health and runs a busy natural hormone clinic in Sydney, Australia, where she successfully treats PCOS, PMS, endometriosis, and many other period problems. Naturally, of course. How? It's all in her new book, Period Repair Manual, Natural Treatment for Better Hormones and Better Periods. Dr. Lara Bryden joins me on the phone from Australia. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bryden.
Hi, Lynette. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Let's start off. In your book, you say that no matter your age or situation, it's time to get to know your period and that there's no better time than to do it right now. Why is that?
Because your period is an important expression of your underlying health. And for example, I always ask my patients about their periods, even when they've come to me for something else. I'm asking about their periods. I'm looking for clues about ways to help them generally. For example, I'll just give one example. If periods are irregular, I might decide to order a blood test for thyroid disease or, you know, screen for iron deficiency or things like that.
So there are different symptoms that we might have that we just equate to, oh, that's just because I'm having my period. But you're saying that they point to other problems.
Yeah, of course. I mean, our period health is not separate from the rest of our health. As you say in your, as you said in your introduction, it's once our body's healthy, then our periods are healthy.
And you call it like a monthly report card. So how do I keep track, or anybody out there who needs to keep track, how do they do that with the monthly report card?
Well, in my book, I invite people to use either a period app for their phone or pen and paper just to start to record their period start dates and any premenstrual symptoms that might arise and signs of ovulation, which is another very important monthly symptom, and to start to get a sense of what's happening with their periods and then, you know, go on to the next step of trying to figure out how to fix that.
But how do you know if you're ovulating? I don't really get how that works.
That's a very good question. And that's something I spend a lot of time talking about with my patients, because ovulation is very important. It's I'll just say it. Ovulation is important for women because it's how we make our two hormones, estrogen and progesterone, which are have many benefits for health. Physical signs of ovulation would include, sometimes women will get a little bit of, you know, pelvic twinging as they get close to the day. Ovulation usually happens right around mid-cycle, around day 14. And they can also watch for a change in vaginal mucus, which is something I speak about in the book quite a lot. And they can look for a rise in body temperature that happens right after ovulation. It's quite interesting.
Now, when you say day 14, just help me understand. So you're saying that if you have a report card and you put the day your period starts, you're not talking about 14 days into, what's the cycle?
Yeah, very good question. So day one of the cycle is defined as the first day of heavy bleeding. So I ask women not to count the few days of spotting that might happen before their period. They start on day one. Yeah, in a standard 28-day cycle, ovulation would generally occur around day 14 of that cycle. Of course, not everyone has a 28-day cycle, and that's fine. The normal range for a cycle is anywhere from 21 to 35 days. And for example, someone with a 35-day cycle would ovulate around day 21.
So I want to get more into that, but I want to talk. I think you have a really interesting story, and I was reading about you. You said that you went to the University of Calgary to study zoology and botany and ecology, but how did you get into being a naturopathic doctor? It's sort of a leap.
Yeah, you know, it was just for me personally, it was just a eureka moment. It was one of those chance things. I'd never heard of naturopathic medicine. throughout my, I loved biology and I loved learning about the body and about nature. And I was so excited about all of that. But I just knew instinctively that conventional medicine was not something I was interested in doing, primarily because I didn't want to prescribe drugs because I'd grown up in a very naturally minded household. So when I first learned of the existence of naturopathic medicine, yeah, I just knew that that was a way that I could combine my love of biology with my need to work with people and help people.
And it also was in the 90s, which was a tricky time for women's health. So explain a little bit about what was going on and why it's sort of important of what we're talking about now.
Yeah, it was a scary time for women's health. So that was about almost 20 years ago when I started practicing. And at that time, you know, your average, say, perimenopausal woman, late 40s, you know, would basically, most of them would have had a hysterectomy, which is the removal of uterus. And sometimes they just take the ovaries out too, just to kind of for completeness, I guess. And women were using, again, so women in their 40s were using a horrible form of hormone replacement called Premarin, which all of us knew instinctively was causing problems and side effects. And young women were on high dose estrogen pills and not really given sort of any other options in terms of their period health. In truth, for young women, it's not that much different now.
And why did you write the book? Your book is called Period Repair Manual. The first chapter is called Understanding Your Period. So why is this an important book for you right now?
I think my motivation was over these last two decades, I've learned how well natural treatment works for period health. And I just wanted to get the message out there. I just felt like I was, you know, needed to go beyond just helping one patient at a time and reach out there. And a big part of it was the message that's in my book. In the second chapter of my book, I make a case against the routine use of the birth control pill. And I feel, although there are some books that are out there that discuss it, there's just not enough. I felt like I needed to add to the conversation about that.
And you do say that there are pluses to it, and it was a really important step in women's rights to birth control, that kind of thing. But what you do talk about is what it actually does do to your period and how it is prescribed to solve problems that are solvable in other ways. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it's a basic, amongst doctors and women, I think there's a basic misunderstanding about what the pill is. A lot of conventional medicine operates under this assumption that the steroidal drugs in the pill are somehow equivalent or the same to women's own hormones. And in fact, they're quite different. I mean, they are steroids, but they're not identical to our own estrogen and progesterone, and they have very different effects. And to have the use of the pill to work, it not only adds foreign synthetic hormones to our body, but it shuts down our own hormonal system, which is the part that concerns me the most, because then we lose out on the benefits of estrogen on mood, for example. We lose out on the benefits of estrogen and metabolism estrogen and progesterone for metabolism and weight loss. And yeah, those are my biggest concerns.
So let's talk a little bit about what those hormones that we do have naturally do, because you're saying that when you take the pill, those hormones are shut down completely.
Yeah, it's a shutdown. If you measure them, for example, if you do a blood test for a hormone called estradiol, which is the most important estrogen in women, and a test for progesterone, if you test someone who's on the pill, those levels are basically zero. There's nothing showing up there on the blood work. As I said, we need them. I mean, they have, and I go in the book, I talk about all the different benefits they have for mood and healthy hair and libido, which is something else I'm quite interested in, another topic I'm interested in for women. I think women have the right to a libido. I think it's quite sad that women just quietly lose their libido on the pill and never really understand, I think, what's happened.
Right. And you also talk about the fact that when you have a period bleed on the pill, it's actually not a period bleed. So explain that.
It's a drug withdrawal bleed. So the synthetic estrogen stimulates the buildup of the uterine lining. And then when you withdraw the pill when you take the sugar pills, it sheds. The timing of that in a 28-30-day cycle is purely arbitrary. And it's absolutely the case that the drug companies did that just to make the pill more appealing and feel more natural, but they could time it to any number of random days that they wanted to, you know, 65 or 86, or I mean, the monthly bleeding doesn't mean anything in terms of the actual body and the hormonal events and the ovulation event that would normally, that would lead to a normal period.
And the irony of that is that it is often prescribed to help irregular periods so that people think, oh, I don't have an irregular period, but it's not a period at all.
Absolutely. That single thing that you just said, I think, is the biggest myth that's out there about the pill. I think the biggest problem in a way, and I know from my own conversations with my patients and my readers that on my blog, that when women learn that, when they understand that this is really not a period, it fundamentally changes the way they see the pill. Suddenly they realize it's not actually fixing anything that's going on underneath.
And I want to get to that point within the teenage community. I taught a class at Arcata High School here locally, and there were a number of the young women there that were on the pill, and it was sort of their go-to thing. They went to Planned Parenthood or their doctor to seek out the pill to help them with acne or heavy periods and that kind of thing. So I want to talk about how that's being prescribed to these young girls and how they really aren't being informed, or maybe they are, of what it's doing and what are their alternatives.
All excellent questions. And the way it's being prescribed, the phrase I'd use is willy-nilly. Mm. It's just being given as kind of, we're in this strange time when we just kind of perceive this as part of a woman's development somehow to go on to these synthetic hormones. And I know this is not going to last. I mean, future generations are going to look back at this, I predict, and just not quite be able to believe this, that we put just so randomly all of these girls, all these women, three generations we are now, on the pill. In terms of just the specific things you mentioned, the acne and the heavy periods, those can be quite concerning symptoms. I don't belittle those at all. And there's no question that the pill masks those symptoms. The synthetic estrogen dries up skin oils and is highly effective for clearing up acne. But the problem is it doesn't fix the cause. And the worst problem, I think one thing that if these girls knew is what happens is it sets them up for actually a much worse acne when they go to come off the pill. And that's something I deal with a lot, is women in their 20s and 30s who've come off and are just, you know, at that age, faced with a pill withdrawal acne, which is quite difficult to treat.
Which makes them want to go on it some more.
Yeah, and then they just go straight back on it. And I talk about pill withdrawal acne in my book a little bit. It usually lasts about, it's the worst is about 3 or 4 months out from the pill, and then it usually starts to calm down. The other thing, I will respond to your question about heavy periods, because that's something, I mean, that can be really problematic for, you know, for a young girl, a teenager. I understand that. And fortunately, there's two things I'll say about that. One thing is that it's usually temporary. It's just as these girls, what's happening is estrogen's at that level, their own estrogen is quite a new thing for their body, and their hormone receptors are just becoming used to that. And it usually settles down on its own after a year or two. That's something I see all the time. And fortunately, there are things, very highly effective natural treatments that can be used in the interim to alleviate that symptom, to reduce, I'd go so far as to say reduce the flow by half or to one third of what they were experiencing. Then that makes it very manageable.
What are some of those?
Well, I'm going to say, first of all, one that is actually not technically a naturopathic treatment, but it's just something that works so well, is just to use a day or two of, what do you call it in the States, like Advil or ibuprofen, or it's the anti-inflammatory, like that dramatically reduces what are called the prostaglandins, this sort of chemical in the body that's contributing to the heavy bleeding during the actual bleed. So I might say to these girls, okay, just take, you know, an Advil twice a day during your first 2 days of bleeding, and just that alone reduces it by half. And then on top of that, then I look at the natural treatments that work best for teenagers are two things specifically. I mean, I talk about this in the book, and I'll preface it by saying they wouldn't necessarily be suitable for every single girl possibly, but I think they're safe things to try. Is one is to reduce milk products in the diet. Milk, especially in teenage girls, dairy products make periods heavier, and I don't have a specific mechanism for that. I talk a little bit about inflammation and a couple of issues in the book, but I just know that it works. And so they might just need to reduce dairy products for, say, 6 months until their periods start to slow down. And the second treatment that works so well, and the girls tell me themselves, I think that's the thing that's most important, is turmeric. Is the herbal medicine turmeric in tablet form has a similar effect to Advil, and they can, and the girls, but the way it works better if they take it every day all month. It's usually just one tablet per day and it's safe. And, you know, after a month or two, that will result in significantly less flow.
Interesting. And yeah. What about, there are other ways to treat other period problems that you mentioned in your book, like magnesium and zinc. And let's talk a little bit about PMS symptoms.
Yeah. Yes, I'll just say with PMS, culturally, we have this idea that it's PMS is inevitable somehow, that that's just, you know, part of what women go through. And that is not my experience with my patients. And personally, I think, yes, sometimes we are going to have PMS, but usually if we've managed some of the underlying hormonal issues, and one of the things that affects PMS is something called chronic inflammation in the body, which may or may not be a concept that's familiar to your listeners. Inflammation comes from a number of things, but especially from diet and the health of our digestive system. And then there are nutrients that you can take to reduce inflammation, of which magnesium is one of the best ones. It's probably the number one nutrient. And when you do that, you can get almost instant relief from PMS. It's one of the symptoms that responds most quickly, like often within the first month or by the second month at least. So I call, in my book, I refer to magnesium as the miracle mineral for periods and especially for PMS.
And how often would you take that?
You can take it daily. Magnesium is very safe. And there's a few different formulations that are out there. The only problem that people sometimes have with magnesium is the wrong kind. If it's just what's called a magnesium oxide or a cheaper magnesium, it can work as a bit of what's called an osmotic laxative. So it can cause loose bowels, which what I would encourage your listeners, if they've tried magnesium and that happened, I would just say look for a different brand. You know, ask the pharmacist for one that does not cause that side effect.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I am your host, Lynette Nutter, and I am talking with Dr. Lara Bryden about fixing your health by fixing your period. Now, one of the other things that we were talking about with PMS that I read in the book is that there are certain symptoms in PMS that point out that you might be low on iodine.
Yes, it's breast pain. So the breasts love iodine. There's a huge amount of iodine in the breasts, and it's a topic that's being researched, and I'm just... even bring up that reference paper for you. So there's scientists that are looking at that, and what they're finding is that it's there, the iodine, the body's accumulating iodine there to regulate our what are called estrogen receptors to kind of sort of stabilize them and prevent the breast tissue from overreacting to estrogen. So iodine, it's a long term, it's something that I, you know, learned 20, 25 years ago in naturopathic college as a treatment for fibrocystic breasts and painful premenstrual breasts. And even as I've worked with it over these last couple of decades, I just find it works again and again.
Good information. I can just see the people running to the store right now to get that.
Before they run to the store, I do feel like I need to say here that iodine does need to be used somewhat carefully. And there are products on the market that are actually frighteningly high dose iodine, and too much iodine, it can damage thyroid. So the iodine is the one thing where I would say just check the dose. I'll just state what I consider kind of a safe dose for the average person, just to not exceed that without speaking to a doctor or a practitioner about it. It would be about 0.5 milligrams or 500 micrograms is usually a safe dose. And I only mention it because there are products on the market that are not 500 micrograms, but are 50,000 micrograms. That's quite a different sort of thing.
And is it pill form or liquid form?
Comes in both. Pill or liquid. It just requires a little bit of research before using it, but not to be, you know, afraid of it. It's actually a great, very helpful nutrient.
And we should point out that people should be talking to their doctors about this as well, and that this is just food for thought to do with the information what you like.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the choices then. We talked about how the pill is something that is a little overprescribed in your book. You talk about that. But what are some contraception choices that you would like people to know more about?
Okay, well, I might start with the IUD. I'll just say it's not necessarily my absolute first choice, but my first choice for women that can really do it is, and hopefully we'll have time to talk about it, is something called fertility awareness, which is fertility tracking, which can work very well. But the reason I want to mention IUD, intrauterine device, first of all, is that what I'm finding is quite alarming, really, at some level, that the young women, at least the young women I speak to in Australia in their 20s, and some of my readers from the States, have never even heard of an IUD. Like it just went off the radar, even though in other parts of the country, in Europe and in some Asian countries, you know, it's very popular and one of the most widely used. And for some reason, I know why, because of a bad experience with a particular kind of IUD in the 1970s that caused pelvic infections. And the truth is the modern ones do not carry that risk. So I feel...
Well, it was more than just infections. There were a lot of women that died because of it, right?
Yeah, about 15 women died. So, I mean, obviously that was tragic. That was terrible. But the difference is the modern ones have a different structure, you know, different construction, and don't carry that risk.
Well, do you know, the interesting thing about it is when I was in my 20s, I always sort of felt like the IUD was for the older women, you know, and that the pill mm-hmm. was sort of the young. I mean, I don't know if that still is the case, like if that's the perception. I should probably ask some of my teen.
That is the perception with many family doctors that I've communicated with, at least down here in Australia. And again, that's an outdated perception. The modern advice, and I have a quote in my book about this, that, you know, Pediatric Association in the US has stated the IUD is safe for women, young women, before they've had children.
And there are two kinds. There's the Mirena, which has a bit of a hormone release, but nothing close to the pill. And then there's the copper.
I guess the advantage of many of these other types of contraception, if we have a chance to talk about them all, the ones I like, or the ones I prefer for women's health generally, are ones that do not work by suppressing ovulation. For me as a doctor, you know, for what I'm trying to do with women and their health and their vitality, it's all about ovulation. I want women to ovulate. I know from my experience with patients that that's when they feel well. You know, that's what gives them the benefits of their own hormones. So the copper IUD just works. It has two methods of action. It actually worked. The copper ion, so the copper device that sits inside the uterus does have a spermicidal or a sperm inhibiting action. And it also, by sort of touching the lining of the uterus, it prevents implantation. So it has kind of purely sort of a physical effect.
And then there's the other, let's go into, obviously condoms are part of that choice.
They're great. I mean, the thing is, what I find, I don't know, you know, the teenagers you've spoken to, but a lot of the ones that I've spoken to are using condoms anyway, as they should be, to prevent sexually transmitted disease. So these girls are using condoms plus the pill, which I understand from a parent's perspective might just be, okay, you've got that, you know, backup plan to avoid unwanted pregnancy. But I propose in my book the second backup plan. So I propose, for people that are really, you know, young people or people that are very concerned about avoiding pregnancy, I might suggest using condoms on every occasion, and then learning the fertility awareness method to know just those 5 or 6, 7 days out of the month when you are actually fertile, and then avoiding intercourse completely on those days, just to avoid, you know, dodge the concern of a broken condom.
Okay, so let's talk about that method since that's your favorite.
Yeah, it's my favorite. There's a growing popularity. It's actually quite interesting to see what's happening in the media around this. So it's called the fertility awareness method. It dates back, it has a long history. Sort of, it's also referred to as the rhythm method. I mean, it was early use was with the Catholic Church as a suitable contraception method. It's purely about learning, tracking ovulation and learning when you're fertile and either abstaining during those days or using a barrier method.
And then there's the period app.
Yeah.
Right. So that's part of it, right?
The period app can be a tool to use with the fertility awareness method. One thing I'll say, I see something happening actually with some of the young women I speak to. So the period app, which is a little application on the phone where you tell it when you get your period, and then it decides when you probably will ovulate, and it puts a little symbol there. You could look at, okay, I'm going to ovulate on February 14th. But the problem is that's just an estimate that you cannot, I've spoken to some young women who are actually relying on that, which is a mistake, that you can't rely on that. It's to use the fertility awareness method with or without a period app as your calendar method. You really must learn to look for the physical signs of ovulation, which we referred to a little bit at the beginning of the interview, looking for mucus signs, tracking temperature is another way you can sort of feel the position of the cervix. And those are essential for the method. Otherwise, because what can happen is ovulation is not that predictable. You can ovulate some months, you might ovulate a lot sooner than expected. And obviously, if you're relying on it for contraception, you need to be aware of that.
I guess when you talk about it, for me, I just think, oh my gosh, something else I have to keep track of. And in all of our busy schedules, including teenage girls who have classes and sports or whatever, I don't know if I can see the young girls that I know actually keeping track and doing that day in and day out and monthly.
I wouldn't suggest that a teenage girl use the fertility awareness method as her sole method of contraception. I do prefer that they're using condoms all the time. The girls, they like the period apps. They love them, actually. I mean, at least the teenagers I've spoken to, they're on board with that. It's something on their phone. If they're not relying solely on it for contraception, the period app could just be an aid. All they have to do is enter in when they get their period, and you can backdate it. So if you forget to enter, you can kind of go back and say, oh, I got my period on Tuesday, and it went for 3 days. And they can easily learn to watch for signs of cervical mucus and things like that. I think it's viable in terms of learning when you know, learning about their cycle.
Now, one thing that I did read in your book that actually surprised me is that it's been a myth, sort of, that we all are born with a set amount of eggs, and when those sort of run out, we're all done. But in your book, there's a new study you refer to that sets that up as a myth. So tell me a little bit about that as we wrap it up.
Absolutely. It's really exciting research. It just came out a couple of years ago. I don't actually have the name of the scientist on the tip of my tongue, but one of the quotes that came from the researchers was, this is, you know, game changing. This is kind of like, you know, discovering life on Mars. It's that astounding for people. What they discovered is that at least in animals, and I think now there's a new study that's discovered, you know, starting to confirm that in humans, that we have these what are called ovarian stem cells that potentially, you know, could just keep making eggs indefinitely. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know where the idea came from that women have a certain amount of eggs and they run out. I think it must have just been somebody's idea that just kind of became entrenched.
Well, it's interesting. And the other thing that I read that surprised me is that their birth control pill for men, that it actually is something that could be available, but what?
Well, certainly the technology exists. It's never been brought to market. Partly because, I mean, you know, to shut down a male libido, I guess, would just make everything impossible. But some of the quotes I heard from, you know, the researchers, it's like, well, they just know men are never going to stand for that. They're not going to stand for the weight gain and the depression, you know, the drop in libido. It's just, you know, not on the cards for them.
So that's something we should endure, but they can't.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I just want to wrap it up with one last comment, just how young women or women can talk to their doctors about their choices and being more informed.
Well, I'll just say, when it comes to the pill, it depends on whether they're using it to control period symptoms or whether they're using it for contraception. You know, I guess if contraception is the issue their main concern, then I would at least ask them to sort of raise the question with their doctor about an IUD, if that's an option for them. And then in terms of their symptom control, I suspect that's a bigger topic, but then we have in our last final minutes of the interview, but yeah, just I guess one simple statement could be, you know, doctor, I understand that the bleeds from the pill are not really periods. Is that true? You know, is the pill actually doing anything to change my own hormones?
Right. It's doing some research, and part of that research might be looking into your book. Thank you so much for joining us. I really actually, it shed a lot of light for me even reading the book. I'm excited to see what happens, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Lynette. It was really great.
You have been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I am your host, Lynette Nutter, and I've been talking with the author and naturopathic doctor, Laura Bryden. Her book is called Period Repair Manual, Natural Treatment for Better Hormones and Better Periods, and is available on Amazon. For more information, you can go to her website at laurabryden.com. That's LARABRIDEN.com. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to our executive producer and today's engineer, Kathleen Marshall, and our audio editor is Beth Rogers. To listen to this program again in the next 2 weeks, go to khsu.org, click on Web Audio, then Audio Archives. You can also listen to it anytime in Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives, where you can learn more about the show, view the upcoming schedule, or post listener comments. Visit our blog at www.khsuwomen.wordpress.com. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.
March is Women's History Month, and what better way to celebrate than to commemorate Through the Eyes of Women's 30th anniversary on the air. That's right, 30 years right here on KHSU. I'm Through the Eyes of Women's newest host, Lyndon Turner. For the next 3 weeks, we will be airing a retrospective of our shows beginning in 1985. So tune in Monday afternoon for an exciting dose of local radio history. That's Through the Eyes of Women, every Monday afternoon at 1:30, right here on KHSU.